Early afternoon, the Sunday before last, hundreds of people met in the centre of Bristol to protest against the Police and Crime Bill. This is a big piece of legislation that's going through Parliament at the moment. By the end of the afternoon, that crowd of hundreds had turned to thousands. The news reporters who attended the demonstration talked about, although there were lots of people, the atmosphere was lively, it was happy. People walked down Broadmead holding cardboard banners, protesting for their right to demonstration. Others sat in the road outside Bridewell Police Station, singing and chanting together. But over the next few hours, things turned radically different. Police vans were set on fire. Police officers were injured. Bridewell Police Station was smashed in. How could such a peaceful crowd become so violent so quickly? Maybe you attended the demonstration a couple of weeks ago and you've been shaken up by it, and that's a question you've been asking yourself. Maybe you just heard about the events from the news and you've still been wondering that too. How could such a peaceful crowd become so violent so quickly? Well, as we look at this passage from Matthew 27 this morning, we might well ask that same question. If you joined us for our service last Sunday morning, you'll remember that we heard about Jesus arriving into the city of Jerusalem on a donkey and being celebrated as God's long-promised king. Yet here we are, in the same city, only a few days later, and another crowd, perhaps containing many of the same people, now shouting, "Crucify him." How could such a peaceful crowd become so violent so quickly? Well, for the next few minutes, we're going to dig into this passage from Matthew chapter 27. And as we try and understand what went on that day, Matthew's going to show us two things. Number one, recognize that Jesus is innocent. That's the first thing Matthew's going to show us. And here's the second, recognize that we are not. Recognize that Jesus is innocent, but recognize that we are not. Recognize that Jesus is innocent. As a church family this week, we've been reading through Matthew's account of that first Easter. And if you've been joining in with us, you'll have read about how the religious leaders, they've been plotting to destroy Jesus. They've managed to win one of Jesus' closest followers, Judas, onto their side so that he might betray him. Now they've arrested Jesus and they've hauled him before their religious court. And they've called witnesses who have testified that Jesus was claiming to be God. The religious council, they've reached their verdict. Jesus is guilty. He's guilty of blasphemy. And so they conclude he's worthy of execution. But for the religious leaders, they have one problem. Under Roman law, they can't execute anybody. And so, at the beginning of chapter 27, if you've got a Bible, do grab it and have a look back to the beginning of Matthew chapter 27, where we read, "Early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people made their plans how to have Jesus executed. So they bound him, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate, the governor." This morning's passage picks up the conversation. And we pick it up in that middle number 11, verse 11. Because you see, at this time it was well known that the Roman authorities and the religious ones, they didn't always see eye to eye. And so when these Jewish leaders bring Jesus to Pilate, well, Pilate's not just going to take their word for it. And so Pilate asks Jesus himself, verse 11, "Meanwhile, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?'" Do you see Jesus' response? "You have said so," Jesus replied. Let me ask you, what do you make of that? Because Jesus isn't denying Pilate's question, is he? He's not denying that he's the king of the Jews. But the way Jesus says it, it's almost as if Jesus wants to communicate to Pilate that Jesus might be a king, just not quite in the way that Pilate might think. After all, Pilate, he's the Roman governor. When Pilate thinks of a king, he's thinking of politics and policies and power. But as we learned last Sunday, to think of Jesus as just like a prime minister or a president or another human leader is to totally misunderstand who Jesus is. No, it's as if Jesus is saying he's something more than that. And as Matthew does regularly through his gospel, he gives us a big hint in the next few verses. Have a look down with me to verse 12. When Jesus was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate asked him, "Don't you hear the testimony they are bringing against you?" But Jesus made no reply, not even to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. After Jesus gives his slightly cryptic response to Pilate, Jesus doesn't say anything further. Pilate can't believe it. Who is this guy? He's facing trial before a Roman governor. He's facing charges which could lead to his death. Yet Jesus doesn't say anything. Maybe that's something you're wondering. You're scratching your head on the sofa this morning. What's Jesus doing? If we were in his position, well, we would be doing all we can to defend ourselves. Yet Jesus, he's silent. Well, to help us understand a little bit more what's going on here, let me read some verses to you from the Old Testament prophet Isaiah. These words were spoken by the prophet Isaiah around 700 years before that first Good Friday. Let me read you these words from Isaiah chapter 53. "Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem." These are some of the most famous verses from all of the Old Testament, and they're so famous because they describe the king that God promised his people he would bring, his long-promised king who would bring his people blessing. Let me read a few more verses to you. They're so moving. "Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet he considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. And the punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all." Then listen to this. "He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, as a sheep before its shearers is silent. So he did not open his mouth." Do you see what's going on here? As Jesus stands trial before Pilate, as he faces charges which could lead to his death, his staying silent only demonstrates that he is in fact the King of the Jews. He is the one that Isaiah spoke of all those years ago. Recognize that Jesus is innocent. That's the first thing Matthew has to say to us this morning. Let me ask you, as you loaded up your device to tune into our broadcast this morning, who were you thinking that Jesus was? I mean, like, who do you think he is? Because I guess there could be some of us listening in this morning who have got our understanding of who Jesus is maybe from our family or our culture or our heritage. Maybe we know lots of people who say they believe in Jesus. They sing his name in songs. Perhaps they have an ornament or a picture of him up at home. Maybe even a cross around their neck. Yet as you think about these people you know, you're just not sure what impact he has on their everyday life. Maybe you've got your view of Jesus from another religion. Maybe another sacred text like the Quran. After all, Christianity and Islam do say some of the same things about Jesus. Jesus was a prophet of God, for example. He was miraculously conceived. He was born of Mary. He ascended to heaven. He will one day return again. Maybe you've got your view of Jesus from another religion like Islam. But maybe as you think about how you're viewing Jesus, your view of Jesus hasn't really come from somewhere else or something. And you've decided your view of Jesus largely on how it feels to you. And if that's you, you're not alone. When I speak to many of my friends and family and neighbors about who they think Jesus is, well, often the Jesuses that they describe seem so different to each other that they're virtually different people. Whether our view of Jesus has come from our family, our culture, another religion, or just what seems to feel right inside, well, can I ask you this? How does that Jesus fit with the view of Jesus that Matthew gives us in our passage this morning? Because the truth of Christianity stands or falls on whether, in fact, the man that was crucified that first Good Friday was, in fact, the King of the Jews. And wouldn't it be such a shame if you went through your whole life believing in or not believing in Jesus, when all the while your understanding of who Jesus was just not based on the real him? Because in the second half of our passage this morning, we see a number of people misunderstand who Jesus is. And as we look at these responses for the rest of our time, Matthew's going to show us that second thing. Number one, recognize that Jesus is innocent. Number two, recognize that we are not. The first person who misunderstands who Jesus is Pilate himself. Pilate's pretty taken aback by Jesus' silence before his questioning, and actually seems kind of impressed. And so he decides to try and let Jesus off the hook. Have a look down with me to verse 15. Now it was the governor's custom at the festival to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At that time, they had a well-known prisoner whose name was Judas Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you? Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who is called the Messiah?" For he knew it was out of self-interest that they had handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message: "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." Pilate's not stupid. Now, he's a shrewd politician. He realizes that the chief priests, now that they've brought Jesus to him, Jesus isn't guilty. No, Pilate's realized that the reason they've brought him to him is because they're envious of him. And so Pilate looks for the best way to let Jesus go free without having to confront the religious leaders themselves. And so Pilate comes up with a plan. He's going to do what he does often at this time of year, at the Passover, the really big Jewish festival in Jerusalem. He's going to let a prisoner go free to the Jewish crowd that's emerging outside. And what's more, well, did you notice that little detail about Pilate's wife? as Pilate is on the judgment seat with Jesus on trial, well, he gets this almost random message from his wife saying she's had a dream that Jesus hasn't done anything wrong. Don't have anything to do with him. Literally everything is telling Pilate to let him go. And so that's why he comes up with this plan. But for all of Pilate's political skill, he makes one big mistake. And that brings us to the crowd. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask Barabbas to have Jesus executed. "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," they answered. "What shall I do then with Jesus who is called the Messiah?" Pilate asked. They all answered, "Crucify him." "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." Pilate already has in his cells this other man, Barabbas. Now he has Jesus. And as he goes out to the crowd to give them the choice, well, there's going to be no doubt in his mind that the crowd are going to pick Jesus. Like, if Pilate knows anything about Jesus, he knows about Jesus' reputation with crowds. Matthew's been showing us that right since the beginning of his gospel. Everywhere Jesus has gone, he's amazed the crowds with his teaching. He's wowed them with his healing. It's actually likely that Pilate would have had spies in Jerusalem, and he would have heard about those events a few days earlier when Jesus came in to Jerusalem, hailed by the crowd as the God's long-promised king. But Pilate misunderstands crowds, because crowds, after all, are crowds. Like our city found out the Sunday before last, crowds are volatile, they're unpredictable. And a peaceful crowd can soon become violent. The religious leaders, the chief priests, they get in amongst the crowd. Perhaps we can imagine some of the rumors that they would have spread through the crowd, rippling through like wildfire. And the difference is scary, isn't it? Because where many people in Jerusalem were praising Jesus only a few days before, now they're screaming for his blood. I think this passage serves as a real warning to us. I don't know about you, but often as I go through life and I encounter difficulties, I can be so quick to blame those difficulties on other people. So for example, in my own life over the last couple of weeks, I've been having to come to terms with the fact that often towards the end of the day, maybe my wife Helena's getting a bit flustered. Maybe she's trying to look after our young son, and maybe she's trying to get the dinner ready. And when she's kind of getting a bit worried perhaps sometimes, I can get really frustrated about that. Yet all the while, I've been turning up home late, much later than I said I would. So often we can be quick to find the fault in others, when actually, often it lies at our door. We're so quick to find blame in others. Other people in our home, other people in our school or our workplace, other people in our city. But I'm afraid Matthew just won't let us have the moral superiority of thinking like that this morning. Because do you notice that everyone in this narrative has some responsibility in sending Jesus to his death? Sure, there are particular people who play particular roles. We'll think about that in a few minutes. But not even the most kind of casual member of the crowd could say, "I had no part to play in sending Jesus to his death." And I think that should serve as a warning to us. Because as Sharon said earlier, our hearts are the same as just as that crowd, aren't they often? Recognize that Jesus is innocent, Matthew says to us, but recognize that we are not. But back into the events. Pilate realizes that, well, things aren't going to his plan. Instead of actually giving the crowd what they want, they're actually really starting to kick off now. And so Pilate looks to try and just get himself out of the situation as quick as he can. And we read verse 24, when Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." This has gone down as one of the most famous acts of cowardice and weakness in all of human history. Here is Pilate about to send this man, this innocent man, to his death. And he kind of symbolically cleans his hands and declares that he's guilt-free. Just think about that for a moment. If Pilate really thought Jesus was innocent, if Pilate really thought, as Matthew indicates, that the Jewish leaders, they've only brought Jesus to him because they're envious of him, his wife's dream. How did Pilate really think that he could wash his hands clean of this matter? But that's the insanity of sin. Because think of what history would say. History says exactly the opposite of what Pilate says here, doesn't it? Let me ask you this. How many governors of minor Roman provinces have you ever heard of? Well, I imagine it's one. And it's Pilate. Why? Well, precisely because of what Pilate did here. Pilate has gone down in history as one of the most people from all of the Roman period. We're still talking about him 2,000 years later. And the fact that Pilate tried to declare himself guilt-free has made not the blindest bit of difference. What a warning that is to us. Because if you're anything like me, when you get into those tight spots, maybe those situations like I described with my wife Helen and I earlier, where really the fault lies with me, well, whilst we're so quick to blame other people, we're so quick to let ourselves off the hook, aren't we? We say to ourselves, "Oh, it doesn't matter." Maybe if it's family, we say, "Oh, they forgive me." If it's an underlying problem that we keep kind of doing again and again, we think, "Well, it doesn't really matter because at least nobody else really knows. The church hasn't found out." But Pilate should be a warning to us. Because Pilate has gone down in history as a great example of weakness and cowardice. And the fact that he kind of declared himself scot-free made the blindest bit of difference. Let me say it to you straight. If you're trying to make your conscience feel better this morning by thinking, "Yeah, I'm a good person. God loves me. I'll get into heaven." Well, heed the warning of Pilate. Because that could have awful and eternal consequences for you. Recognize that Jesus is innocent. But we are not. And we can't just get ourselves off the hook. So what are we to do then? I mean, really, if Jesus is innocent, if, as Matthew wants to show us, we all do have a part to play in crucifying our God. Where are we going to go from here? Well, before we finish, can I encourage us to think about one final person? And that's Barabbas. Matthew describes him, doesn't he, as a well-known prisoner, verse 16. And most people think that the reason Barabbas was well-known was because he was an insurrectionist. That means that he started kind of violent rebellions. He was a bloody murderer. And to help us understand kind of Barabbas' role in Matthew's narrative, I want you to imagine what it would have been like to have been in Barabbas' shoes that day. He's already stood trial. Pilate has sentenced him for his execution. In fact, no one's really denying that Barabbas is guilty. In fact, if you think about it, and you read on through the rest of Matthew's account, very little time now takes place between when Jesus gets executed instead of Barabbas and that order, and then him going out with two other criminals to be hung on the cross. It seems that Pilate's already got things ready. He's already produced three crosses. And so imagine what it would have been like to have been Barabbas that night. Perhaps Barabbas knows that it's his last. Maybe as Barabbas was in the cells, he heard the kerfuffle outside as the religious leaders came with Jesus to be tried by Pilate. I don't know, perhaps Barabbas would have been woken up by the buzz of the crowd, more and more people coming, people saying his name, people saying Jesus' name. Then the cries of crucify him, crucify him. Then the steps of the guard coming down to his cell. The clatter of the keys in the lock. The cell door swings open. Barabbas is free to go. As you're tuning in this morning, you might be wondering, what really is Easter all about? Well, if you've got regrets in your life, if there's things you feel bad about, understand this. What Jesus did for Barabbas, he offers you today. No matter the wrong choices you've made, no matter how many people you've let down, Jesus offers you this morning nothing less than to take the wrath of a holy God for all of the wrong things you've done. All the times you said, shove off God, I'm in charge. And so can I encourage you, if you haven't put your trust in Jesus this morning, can I encourage you, stop making excuses for yourself. Stop trying to make your conscience feel better by just saying, ah, it's not that bad, I'm sure God loves me anyway. Now come to the Lord Jesus and accept the full and final forgiveness, the new life that only he offers. And if you're somebody who has accepted that forgiveness already, maybe long ago, maybe more recently, well, can I encourage you to do today something what Barabbas would have done well to have done that first Good Friday? Whether he did it, we can never know. But Barabbas would have done well, wouldn't he, if later on that Good Friday he had gone up to the execution site. And maybe at a distance he'd have seen those two criminals with Jesus in the middle. And he could have literally thought, Jesus is innocent. I am not. He has died in my place. And I imagine there wouldn't have been a day that would have gone by when Barabbas would have woken up in the morning and not thought of Jesus and the price that he paid for him. Friends, if we want to enjoy the joy of Easter Sunday, and my word, there is joy, come to our service in 48 hours' time. If we want to enjoy the joy of Easter Sunday, we first need to see our place in the events of that first Good Friday.